Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
Yes, well, just got back from Atlanta. They were having a special at the Georgia Dome. Buy four quarters, get one free. So I got a little extra, but I'm back in the fold. Actually talked a little politics while I was down there, so going to share a little bit what I know and then talk about what we know from other sources, too. But starting to quiet down, and I guess we've been seeing some of the post-mortem stuff here in Georgia. But then other places, politics always goes on, of course, including the governor's mansion of Illinois. Politics is basis form, places like that. But we'll try to keep it southern. We'll talk a little national politics. Also, I know people have been wondering. We did finally get to do the first show of Game On, Kevin Ross and I, last Tuesday. Kevin and I just did it ourselves, and then we had some folks that are regular contributors, one from Boston, one from D.C., and one from Minnesota, send in their little clips that we played, and we're going to start having some guests, too. But pretty lively show. We do national, but then we mainly do southern here, so it's good little mix. But we're going to have Andre Walker later on the show. Andre, you know, of course, created a little blog controversy, probably the biggest one since the special election about the Democratic Party of Georgia and his feelings on what should be done there. And, of course, people responded saying that they don't necessarily agree. And then I think he did get some support in other quarters. And so we'll just kind of cover this with Andre. We'll let him tell his side of it and then see where things come down, because, of course, Rashad Taylor came on last week and told us that some of the debt was certainly not the case, and I know that was one of his main points, but that'll be in about 7 minutes. But one thing I'll just kind of kick off with is I noticed in some of the postmortem there's been a lot of defense and attack of Karen Handel and where she's going to come down, and then people talking more about her running with some of the moves that are made. In town, Catherine, what have you been hearing about Karen Handel and her prospects?
I haven't heard very much about her lately, you know, since all the hubbub with Jim Powell, though there have been a lot of discussions within my, you know, sort of circle of Democratic friends about how important it is for us to run a really good candidate for that seat in 2010.
Yes, I was actually talking to someone that said, you know, besides the governor's mansion, that if we could just take one office, Secretary of State would be the one to take, given that what's going on there. And then, of course, I think Eric Johnson's going to try to work with her and limit early voting. So you're just seeing a lot of, you know, really using the elections office part of the Secretary of State's for, you know, Republican bidding. I guess it's harder to, you know, the part that hands out haircutting licenses and whatnot for Republican bidding, but certainly the elections portion of it. She's doing what she can. Tim, I know that Catherine Harris, I mean, not Catherine, see how at easy it happens. I know that Karen Handel gets involved in politics in your area a lot, too. What are you hearing?
Well, let's face it, David, she's just not doing this because she's a partisan Republican, which she is. She's also a politician, and she's thinking about Karen Handel. Yeah, the Secretary of State's job might be a good one to go after, and the reason is, hey, she may be running for another office,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Like governor, like senator, something like that. She's got her eye on something else. I think that's one reason she puts her name out there as much as she can. You know, there's the old political story that where the politician tells the newspaper man, I don't care what you say about me, just make sure you spell my name right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's a lot of what this is.
Oh, yeah, and I noticed that I was listening to the Georgia Political podcast that I guess was done in the last week or so, And Chris Hutton was on there, and he made a really good point that very few people vote in the Republican primary, and one of her calculations may be that if she can appeal to that, say, 10% of people that vote in the Georgia Republican primary, then and wins that, then you just really don't have to worry about the general election. And I think you're seeing a lot of Republicans that think that the Republican primary is the election, and unfortunately, the last two or three elections, that it's been hard to refute that. But if they keep overreaching in that way, it may get to be where a lot of more moderate voters say, forget that, we've got to have something more.
I still think that Casey Cagle is the guy so far that's coming through all of this smelling like a rose. Have y'all ever noticed when all of this stuff gets started between the governor and the speaker, or between Karen Handel and this person, somehow Senator Cagle is, or Lieutenant Governor Cagle, excuse me, is always on the sideline and pretty quiet and right in the middle somewhere.
But that would serve him well in a general, but then could that hurt him in a primary in which people say, hey, you weren't a good Republican fighter, and then additionally, you have the Christian Coalition Ralph Reed machine that might be out for revenge. And in a two-candidate race, it may be harder to do, but if it's a four-candidate race, they could really knife him out, if you will. Something to think about.
I think you're absolutely right about that. He's got to be sort of all things to all people at this point.
Yes. Well, I think we have our guest to join us. Andre, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, Andre. Well, Andre, you wrote a post recently. I guess it was on Peach Pundit. I guess, did you cross-post it on your blog, Georgia Politics Unfiltered?
I did not.
You did not. Okay, so just on Peach Pundit. Well, Andre, I guess the best way for, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have read that post or have heard enough of the basic premise, but kind of just give us just the basically what you said or hit the highlights.
Well, the highlights is that I basically said that it was time for the chair of the Democratic Party of Georgia, Jane Kidd, to go, and I outlined several reasons why I felt that we needed new leadership in the party, the lackluster candidate recruitment this year, along with the AJC reports that the party was six figures in debt, and a list of other things that basically I felt that weren't being addressed. So it's still online, and I think it speaks for itself, and I stand behind it.
Yes. Well, talking about the party in debt, now, apparently the figure that you looked at was what the House caucus and the Senate caucus had as debt, and the actual Democratic Party of Georgia really is not carrying any debt. The actual party itself, the DPG, isn't that an important distinction to make that was not made in the post?
Well, it is an important distinction, but the fact is that there are just certain basic tenets that the state party is supposed to do. They're mandated to do by our bylaws, and one of those is to provide the state committee with an annual written financial report of the affairs of the state party. Now, what exactly are the members of the public supposed to think when they see something written on the AJC that says the party is six figures in debt? I as a state committee member have yet to receive a written financial report, and I requested it in November of last year. So, I can only believe what is on the financial disclosures and what's written in the papers.
Well, I will tell you that I've sat in meetings, and they've had on a PowerPoint, they've laid out the budget, they've written down on the budget, they've actually had printed spreadsheets. But wouldn't that be, if what you have has not been given to you that you want, that wouldn't actually be Jane Kidd's role, that would be the treasurer's role, correct?
Well, it would be the treasurer's role, but ultimately the buck stops at her desk. And when it all comes down, when it's all said and done, people don't necessarily look, to use a football analogy, they don't look at the defensive coordinator, they don't look at the offensive coordinator, they look at the head coach, And if the head coach isn't running a good ship on the field, then it's usually the head coach that gets fired.
Well, I guess Willie Martinez, the defensive coordinator at Georgia, would love your analogy because I think everybody's calling for his head, not Mark Richt. But I don't want to hog all the question time, but I may come back. Catherine, any questions for Andre?
Hi, Andre. It's Catherine Smith here in Atlanta. I would like to just talk a little bit about your sort of where you stand in sort of general terms. As you know, our listeners may or may not know, you and I met back in 2003, I think, during the Howard Dean in Georgia campaign during the primary. And I've just been wondering lately, do you still consider yourself a Democrat? And if, like in many states, Georgia voters were required to register for a party, would you register as a Democrat?
Yes, I do still consider myself a Democrat. And B, if Georgia had party registration, I would register as a Democrat. I voted for all of the Democrats that were on the ballot this year. I voted early, and I voted absentee. So I don't think that anybody is really calling into question my Democratic credentials.
I just wanted to make sure that that was sort of understood. I'm not calling your credentials into. I just wanted to ask that question, so that we could all sort of understand where you're coming from. And, you know, I value criticism. I think it's very important. However, I do think that criticism is much more valuable when it's accompanied by suggestions and ideas for improvement. And I don't read everything that you write, but most of the time it seems like you spend a lot of time criticizing the party and not much time offering suggestions for how to make the party better. And I just wonder, this is an opportunity for you to, you know, let's say we could go back 12 months. What could we have done better to improve Democratic performance in Georgia in 2008?
Well, you know, I wouldn't even go back 12 months. I would go back 4 years. And the reason why I say I would go back 4 years is because there are some bright spots in the aftermath of the 2008 election. Two bright spots that stand out to me are Rockdale and Newton counties. 4 years ago, Rockdale County went 60% for President Bush. 4 years later, it went flipped and went for Barack Obama. And on top of that, Rockdale County, which used to have an all-Republican county commission, they have, for the first time in recent memory, a Democratic majority on their county commission, along with a clerk of Superior Court. In Newton County went for President Bush in 2004. 8 years later, it's gone for Barack Obama.
Whatever his name is. Okay, well,
And my suggestion is basically we need to sit down and figure out what exactly they did in Rockdale and Newton counties to turn things around so dramatically. And also my suggestions would be to strengthen our candidate recruitment, to vet our candidates.
Absolutely. But I'm really asking for, like, how would we do that? How do we strengthen our candidate recruitment? What kind of ideas do you bring to the table to strengthen candidate recruitment?
Well, you know, the first thing is obviously listening to the people on the ground, listening to the county chairs, because they're the people who know their areas best, and they're the folks that can give us some top-notch candidates, even if they don't win us, and just good candidates to run. It was completely unacceptable for 81 Republicans to be unopposed this election cycle in the state house, and 20 Republicans to be unopposed in the state senate. You know, there were probably some people that were willing to run. If they didn't have the money, then, you know, maybe it's possible, and it's an idea of mine, to create a political action committee that basically raises the money and pays the qualifying fee for any Democrat who wants to run for state house or state senate across the state.
Okay, well, but now let's just go back for a second. You're talking about improvements that have been made in Rockdale County and Newton County, And those have all, most of those improvements we've seen during the term of Jane Kidd's chairmanship of the party. In addition, you're talking about spending more money, but you're criticizing the party for being in debt. So it's very difficult to understand how you would accomplish that if we're going to criticize the party for being in debt, but we are asking the party to spend more money. Where does that money come from? I think that I have my beefs with some of the fundraising strategies of the party, but those are not. I think that they do make every effort to raise money, and so I'm not sure how we reconcile those differences. Do you understand my question? How can you say in one breath that the party shouldn't be in debt, and then in the other breath say, well, we need to spend more money on candidate recruitment?
Well, what I said was that somebody should create a political action committee to raise money to pay the qualifying fee for any Democrat that wants to run for state house or state senate. I didn't say the party should do it, but somebody should. Now, I'm particularly concerned with the debt of the party because obviously. The party has been in that situation before where there was not enough money to keep the doors open, and they had to get a bailout, that term so appropriate these days, a bailout from some of their allied groups. And I'm coming from the position that I don't want to see that happen again. So I think that money should be spent very smartly. I think that, you know, first of all, we've got to figure out how we're going to compensate for the $100,000 worth of salaries that we're now losing since the 50-state partnership is now over. You know, we've got to figure out if we need all this extra staff that we currently have at the party. I counted about 10 people, and in an off-election year, that's way too many.
I've seen several cycles. Those folks typically, by December, around Christmas, those people typically cycle out. I mean, it's known, and Rashad Taylor told us that a lot of that staff was going to go away and they were going to par down to, a much smaller staff, as they always do through several party chairs, through many executive directors. They do the same thing. Also, as far as now paying for candidates qualifying, I don't know if an outside group can legally actually pay for the candidate qualifying if it exceeds the donation limits. But I will say this, I know the party paid for at least one congressional candidate most of his qualifying fee. And so I know that was done. And they had no problem doing that to make sure somebody ran, and I'm sure if more candidates would have been able to be found, then they would have done that. I know in the situation in my area, we had a candidate live both in a state house and a state senate seat. We had one candidate, two places. And we tried to say, hey, why don't you look at this race? You really wanted to look at the other race. But there was just only so many people. I mean, it's hard to find folks, to go in and run for some of these seats that are pretty tall orders. Of course, we'd love to run people in every seat, but it's a little tougher than it seems. But I think Catherine did get to a good point, Andre. If we're going to say, okay, Jane Kidd is not the right person, then who is? Who's your name? I mean, it's kind of like going back to sports. If I want to fire a coach, I got to have a name of somebody I want. Who's your name?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who are thinking about running for state party chair in 2011 when the next election is up. And, yeah, it is scheduled. And, you know, it would be for those people to step forward and say, you know, this is what I've seen that is wrong, and this is my vision for the future. And they'll make their case in whatever way they see fit.
But you're talking 2011. You're saying now Jane Kidd should serve out her term then if you're talking about 2011.
Well, you know, it's really up to the state committee, to tell you the truth. It's up to the state committee to determine whether or not Jane Kidd stays for the remainder of her term. Because, after all, the state committee is the highest authority of the Democratic Party of Georgia. So, you know, there are some county chairs out there who and other Democratic activists who have said, based on what Jane said in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution last March, in March 2007, we should be seeing her resignation letter coming out through an email soon, because she has to be judged on the Senate race, and we lost.
And we took Becky Chambliss to a runoff.
Yeah,
and
that's
came within
the thing.
2 points in the general. I mean,
what did somebody expect? I mean, if you look, I remember those what was the group that kept polling? Well, Strategic Vision and Rasmussen, they both polled poll after poll, and Saxby Chambliss got up to nearly 60 at points. I mean, he did drop considerably, and that has to do something with what we did, either as a party, as our presidential candidate, his efforts. Something was done there. Speaking of fundraising also, I mean, did you go to last year's JJ dinner? That was a tremendous crowd, and that raised a lot of money. I really think, as far as just simple, okay, wins and losses, you know, we can certainly say, hey, we didn't turn out like we should. But if you look at progress measures, one, another big measure of progress, I think, is a lot of folks that did not vote for Jane Kidd. I believe, Catherine, you're one of those that didn't vote
for
Jane
Kidd. No, I was a big supporter of another candidate.
Yes. And now a lot of folks that were in Mike Burlon's camp support Jane Kidd's efforts. That means she's been a reconciler, a person
Absolutely.
That brings everybody in, and that's a positive thing. But, I mean, if you look at raising money, I mean, she made the most she could have. We were trying to get three candidates to come in, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards. Edwards dropped out that day, canceled. Barack Obama didn't come in and speak for us that day. And then Hillary Clinton did. She still had managed to turn that into a big media event and money raiser. That was a huge crowd. I just wish she could have somehow held. We could have held out on some of the endorsements of Barack Obama from the statewide folks until we could get him to come and maybe raise a little more money to get even more. But, I mean, we used that to its fullest advantage. But, Tim, I don't want to leave you out. Tim, give me some questions for Andre.
Yes, I have one in particular. We keep talking about Jane Kidd, Andre, and I was wondering, did you also think should some of the staff, the working staff at the Democratic Party of Georgia, also be replaced, and who might that be?
Well, let me first start by saying that I think. Her name has slipped my mind. The volunteer recruitment person, I think her name
Kelly.
Is Kelly Pierce. Yes, I think that she should stay. My biggest concern with the current staff up at the 1100 Spring Street has always been that there is a significant lack of institutional knowledge up there. You know, there aren't people that are up there that are familiar with the way the Democratic Party of Georgia works, with the personalities that are within the state Democratic Party. The last person up there who had, you know, just a little bit of knowledge, and she had a lot of institutional knowledge, Ann Bartoletti, she left. So you have a whole new group of people up there. And, you know, personally, we can talk about, I haven't been up there enough to know who I would like to see replaced, but I would personally like to see somebody up there who has more institutional knowledge with how this party works.
Okay. Also, in the previous four election cycles, beginning in 2000, the Democrats in Georgia lost seats in the state legislature in each of those years. But this year, even though they were minimal, gains were made. Who gets the credit for that?
Well, you know, first of all, let's talk about those gains. I'm going to first point out that after the 2008 legislative session, which was just abysmal, I think everybody can agree on that. The bickering and the name-calling proved, without a shadow of a doubt, that the Republicans shouldn't be in any position of power. But as UGA political scientist Charles Bullock said, the Democrats blew a big opportunity to basically beat the Republicans all over this state with their lackluster performance. But once again, we didn't put enough candidates out on the field. Now, you know, Jeanette Jameson, she lost because of her own troubles. And there's another Democrat who lost, and his name slips my mind. But
Saul
you also, yes. Now, and then you had there were four seats that were picked up by the Democrats. Two lost for a net gain of plus two. We should have picked up more. In this year, there should have been a lot more, and I believe there would have been more if we had challenged more than we had not left 81 Republicans in the state house unopposed.
Well, the one thing that does make that a little trickier is that if you look in 2006, I mean, in my home district, Bob Puckett came just, about 100 votes short in 2006. In 2008, he came once again about 100 votes short. So, therefore, there's a district that was very, very much targeted, a two percentage point type district, and it was the same thing. And I noticed that, like, I was talking with the state representatives that had a tougher district and really, I thought, had a much closer race than he would have. And he said, really this was a much tougher year in some parts of the state than you'd think, because if you look, a lot of our gains were in inside the perimeter, inside the metro area, and maybe a Savannah and Augusta. But if you got outside those areas, really was just as tough a year, because the national, the national ticket was, was no help or in some places a hurt. I mean, not that I would have it any other way, but it's just the nature of those districts, and it's something we have to look at. That Georgia is very diverse in its makeup, and from place to place, from South Georgia to North Georgia to exurbs to suburbs and metro areas. So it's just not a one formula we can take from one place to another.
Yeah, yes, that's very true. But, how exactly are we supposed to figure out what formula works if we don't even have, a figure in the equation? You know, what happened in Rockdale County, I think you can credit that more to Ruth Wilson and the work she did when she was the county chair out there. And because she was county chair, I believe, she along with, I want to say, Garvin Haynes, they both were county chairs long before Jane Kidd ever, thought about running for Democratic Party of Georgia chair. So we have to, look at the fact that they put their players out on the field. You know, I remember talking to Ruth Wilson when she first started running for clerk, and I said, you've got a tough battle ahead of you, but it's good that you're running. And I basically told her that, you should do what the Republicans do and, build a strong absentee ballot program that includes absentee ballot applications on your mailers, because you can do that. Now, that's the gift that the Republicans gave us. Because before, it used to be that you couldn't have an absentee ballot application anywhere near a political mail piece or anything political whatsoever. So that was the gift they gave us, and I always felt we needed to capitalize on that.
Yes, well honestly, I think if we're going to be real honest, Rockdale and Newton counties, the gains we got there were a lot because of demographic shifts. What we got to do is find out places where the Democratic brand normally wouldn't be so strong looking at the demographics of an area and is. And that's the model we got to follow, I think. And in Thames County, I don't think y'all saw a lot of gains, but obviously y'all seen a lot of holds. And that's more the model that I think we need to look at. Because if a place we can just tell there's been major demographic shifts and that's why it's doing so much better, that's not any. I mean, we can't just have demographic shifts all over the state unless we move people in from out of state. Because I'm sure, you probably see, Gwinnett County, we did much better there. But then I bet if you look at Barrow and Jackson County and probably Hall County, all we did was probably they had more voters voting Republican. The percentage may have changed, but you actually had more Republican votes in those counties. So that's just something to look at. But Andre, I mean, are you going to have more solutions? Like you've kind of gotten this conversation started. Are you going to have more solutions, or is it just going to be a kind of a one thing trying to remove one person?
Well,
or is there a way you can work with Jane Kidd to try to see whatever plan you want enacted?
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that because a lot hasn't been talked about this. First of all, I believe that you should never oppose without proposing. And I wanted to, the point of what I wrote was to get out what I felt were the shortcomings of the state Democratic Party, of the lackluster candidate recruitment. Once again, the fact that the bylaws weren't being adhered to, that we've got committees within the state party that never seem to meet, and I think that just with a little nudge, some pressure from the chair, we would see some action on behalf within those committees. And I think that 2009 is the year where we have a serious discussion. This is what it is, a discussion I believe that we need to have on how we fill in those gaps that are within the Democratic Party of Georgia, and then, so that we can be strong, because the Republicans they are looking to 2010 as the year that they bury the Democratic Party of Georgia. They want the triple crown. They want the governor's mansion, the House, and the Senate, because in 2011 they've got that special session for redistricting, and the magic number for them is 3 in 2010, 120 and 38 in 2011. And that's the two-thirds majority they need to pass any constitutional amendment that they like without any Democratic support. So we have to have this discussion now, throughout the end of 2008, which is coming to an end, and all through 2009. Now, you mentioned that, will I work with Jane Kidd? I'd be happy to work with Jane Kidd. I'm actually working with her right now to put together a committee that will look at all aspects of Georgia's delegate selection plan and the national delegate selection rules, and to make recommendations to the DNC as well as to our own state committee to basically reform the process to make it a little bit more easier to navigate and to ensure that it goes very smoothly come 2012 and for years beyond.
Well, I mean, doesn't that say a lot about her then, if somebody that she's willing to work with somebody that publicly called for her removal? I mean, isn't that the kind of, big tent kind of person that we need leading us? I mean, that a lot of management and leadership, it has to do with just being able to at times bury the hatchet and not let the goal, and let always put the goals of the group ahead of what personal people may be saying about you. I think that you've actually said something in her favor by maybe not intending to.
Well, this,
in that statement.
This was never intended to be personal. I was very clear that there is nothing personal here. This is as politics. This is all about winning, and you can attribute that quote to the former chairman of the Georgia Republican Party. The point is that, working together on one issue doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to agree on everything else. And I have some very strong disagreements with the way things are currently being run with the Democratic Party of Georgia. I think that the state committee could definitely do a better job at exercising its general responsibility over the affairs of the party. I think that all the state party officers, from chair all the way down to secretary, could do an exponentially better job at their duties. Particularly State Representative Winfred Dukes, he could do a better job with candidate recruitment, working with Jane Kidd or whoever the chair is on that. The secretary, when it comes down to the secretary's job, we're supposed to have the minutes of every meeting, and you know, I still haven't received the minutes, so that's a valid criticism there. And I think that we could work on that, even to the point of maybe bringing in court reporters to tackle that issue, so that everybody has a paper copy of the of the minutes every time. You know, we definitely have diversity issues to tackle. If we didn't, then there wouldn't be a challenge to Georgia's DNC delegation. We've got to figure out better ways to handle our intra-party elections, because there's another challenge to Georgia's DNC delegation out there that's just based solely on the fact that the election was not held correctly. And there are a lot of things that need to be corrected, and as I said before, 2009 is the best year to get it done.
Well, can I mention 2 points? Go ahead, Catherine. Would you mention 2 points?
Well, I guess I'm kind of befuddled by all this. I mean, I can't argue with your points, Andre, but all these things, everything we're talking about, from a court reporter to a state committee meeting, to all these things cost money, every single bit of it. And you know, if we're going to be concerned about the fiscal state of the party and the fact that we have, though I would like to be clear that the way I understand it, the debt that we are carrying is for the caucus. We can talk about what that means at some other point, but I just, you know, you're absolutely right. We should do better with candidate recruitment. I agree that the state committee members should be more engaged. But again, all these things cost money and they take staff time. But you mentioned earlier that the staff should be cut. I agree. I think 2009 is a very important year for us to continue party building and continue to develop the party. But it takes people and it takes money. So I don't know how we resolve that.
Well, first of all, it doesn't take money for the state committee to exercise its general responsibility. All they have to do is be eternally vigilant to keep track of what's going on with the state party, to ask questions, and to not let those questions only come up at the very infrequent state committee meetings. They have to be asked all the time, and that doesn't take any money. I mean, asking a question.
You're wrong. You're wrong, Andre. It takes money to have someone on the other end of the phone to answer your questions, to field the questions from the state committee. It takes money. Everything takes money.
Yeah, well Andre, I mean, you mentioned secretary and, you know, what's he doing and that kind of thing. Well, I think it would be inefficient. It costs money to give paper copies. I guess there could be some sort of email system that if they wanted to print them out, they could, or you could just read them. But you think about it, Steve Leeds, he was instrumental in recruiting Jim Martin into the U.S. Senate race. Now, certainly in my non-state party endeavors, I was with another candidate, so it might have behooved me in a personal way to have him not do that. But given that Jim Martin ran, raised money, and then pushed Saxby Chambliss into a runoff, I would think that you'd have to say Steve Leeds did something very good for the Democratic Party of Georgia in getting a candidate that could raise money into that race. And so that's something he did. And speaking of diversity, now I know that the number two person on the party staff, Rashad Taylor, African American, the number two person on this, the leadership, the statewide leadership, Michael Thurman, African American. There's other African American vice chairs. Also, when they had the first DNC election held separately, Miss Mary Long won. African-American. So what are specifically the diversity issues?
Well, you know what? I'm going to read something back to you that that a member of the DNC Credentials Committee said when they first took up, hang on for a second, when they first discussed the challenge to Georgia's DNC delegation, and I believe her name was she's the former chair, current chair of the African American Caucus, and basically what she said, she expressed concern that after having a black chair and at least one black DNC member, basically her concern was we went from two down to one. It was either four down to one or two down to one. And I have the minutes from that August 29th meeting. I'd be glad to provide anybody. It was Virgie Rollins, who's a DNC Credentials Committee member, and she basically said that hang on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but in the larger point, when you look at the electorate of Georgia, does the Democratic Party of Georgia have a minority problem as far as support, or does it have a white problem as far as support?
My answer to that is the Democratic Party of Georgia cannot win if they don't have significant minority support.
But, I mean, if you were looking, you know, like in a religious sense, you know, the flock is in the church and then there's the sinners out on the street. Who's the flock and who's the sinners? Yeah, it's okay, Andre. We're all white, but you can call us sinners.
I'm not
going to call anybody a sinner or a saint. You know, I think that a lot can be done to reach out to both whites and blacks here in Georgia, to keep blacks within the fold of the Democratic Party, and then B, because first of all, we saw what happened when blacks don't turn out. The runoff election showed that pretty doggone clear. 22% black turnout is not going to cut it. But we also need, and this is what Emory University Professor Merle Black said, that the real battle for Georgia is going to take place in the small towns and the rural towns, the rural areas of the state. And those are where a lot of the white voters are, which actually brings up a very interesting point that I've always talked about, the Democratic Party reaching out to the rural parts of the state, even to the point of creating a rural caucus within our party that would address whatever needs and concerns that, that particular area of the state would have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just look at a state like Iowa. I mean, Barack Obama won Iowa, won it, you know, by a decent margin. But obviously that state is overwhelmingly white. What can we do? And it's obviously not an urban state. I mean, what can we do to get southern states, get, you know, white voters on par with voters in Iowa? You worked out in Iowa. I've never been in the state in my life.
I've been to Iowa, and you're right. You know, I told somebody that they're – black population raised 1% as soon as I set foot on the ground. And you know, the thing with Iowa, and I think the important thing to note with Barack Obama's victory there in their caucuses is that is the caucuses are generally geared towards the activists, people who love a candidate so much that they're willing to stay in the cold and stay in a room for hours on end just to caucus for them, going through different rounds and stages. Now, are you talking about the Iowa caucus or the Iowa general election?
The general election. If Barack Obama would have done in Georgia what he did in Iowa, he'd have won the state walking away among white
voters. I think while a lot can be attributed to Barack Obama and his team, I also think that, you know, the reason why states like Iowa that went for Bush in 2004, and correct me if I'm wrong, and New Mexico is, went for Obama is because people wanted to change. You know, I think that regardless of which Democrat was nominated for president, that Democrat would have been victorious over the Republican nominee. That's what I truly believe. It could have been, you know, well, maybe not John Edwards after all the stuff that came out about him, but it could have been, you know, or Dennis Kucinich, but it could have been Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. Both of them would have been victorious because the one thing Americans, I believe, were looking for was change. They were tired of the last 8 years of of the Bush administration.
Andre, if it's okay, I believe we are. Is this Martin? Are you calling in, Martin?
Yeah, hey everybody, how you doing?
Hey. Okay, Martin, hold on the line just a minute. Well, Andre, do you have any final points before we you head off?
You know, my final point is that, you know, I'm not trying to be the bad guy here. Believe it or not, I don't like press. You know, I would much rather see the Democratic Party be successful and, you know, win and you know, beat the Republicans at their own game, because obviously after just 4 years of Sonny Perdue in the White House, in the governor's mansion, and Glenn Richardson presiding over the House and so forth, we can do so much better, but we've got to get our own house in order and get things ready to go for 2010 so that we can kick butt and take names.
Yes, well, thanks for coming on with us, and luckily the governor's mansion is white, so you, I mean, as far as the color of the house, so you got that part right as far as the White House, so it wasn't too bad a Freudian slip. But thanks again, Andre.
You're welcome.
Yes, Martin, welcome in. You had requested to come on, and we certainly love having one of our favorite, most frequent guests. Martin, what you got for us?
Hey, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to give me a second. I'm still getting over my coronary from the phrase Sonny Perdue in the White House.
Yeah.
Go Fish America, y'all. Go Fish America. No, I do appreciate y'all giving me the time. You know, this is an important conversation that we need to have, and I kind of wanted to come on and talk to you guys a little bit about where the party is right now, the things that we did well and the things that we're looking at in 2009 to, you know, next year to continue building our party, and just kind of talk about some of the things that you've been talking about for the last hour or so. But and actually, I would rather just kind of answer some questions from y'all, but I actually wanted to answer one question that Tim asked Andre, and I wanted to get into that for just a second. The question was, you know, we picked up some House seats this time, and we made some gains, and who gets the credit for that? And I wanted to be very clear that the credit for that goes to those candidates. And a majority of that credit goes to those candidates, because in the end, you know, better than I do, folks go to their voting machine and they punch that touch screen for somebody that they trust, for somebody that they think is going to do a good job representing them. Those candidates made a good case to the voters. And I wanted to just kind of put the credit where credit is due on the candidates and on the hardworking folks who helped them get elected. A lot of them are on the state committee. A lot of them are involved with their county parties. And a lot more are going to get involved with their county parties now, I think. But I did want to kind of touch on that and then see what was on y'all's minds.
Yeah, well that's good. And as the session comes about, I guess one of your jobs will be to always tell what the legislature's doing, either positively among Democrats or negatively among Republicans, obviously in their leadership. So what kind of efforts do you have planned? I noticed the website had already kind of started alluding to that. What are the plans?
Yeah, and actually we're going to expand that a lot over the as we get closer to the kickoff of the session. You know, right now we're talking with the leadership and the caucuses and trying to figure out, well, what can we do? What can we do to promote our message and also to show and continue to show that the folks who are in charge over at the Gold Dome right now are not doing a very good job with your tax dollars? And the case in point, I mean, this is obviously the, you know, this is the gold standard example here, but we're still fully funding a horse park down in Houston County, and I can't imagine who important in this state is from Houston County off the top of my head. But at the same time, and this is much less of a joking matter, we're closing down a veterans home in Milledgeville. And the state share to keep that open is under $2 million. We need to do this. I like horses. I like go fish. I like fishing. I like veterans more. And we got to take care of these folks. It's what we're looking at is just these kind of warped fiscal priorities that come out of the Republican leadership. It's, you know, it would be laughable if it weren't so serious.
Yes. I know that's one issue got going. Also, Martin, that they mentioned, you know, I think Rashad told us a little bit about the staff. I mean, he couldn't say a whole lot, although a week's gone by, and then Andre mentioned it. Any concrete plans that you can tell us about the staff?
Well, you know, obviously we had a lot of staff that were working with us through the election and then through the runoff, and a lot of those folks are going to be moving on. There's I know that some of our former staff have been talking to races up in Virginia and Kentucky. You know, they do their state legislative races in the off year. So we're real proud of them. I think that this election cycle ended up getting a lot of folks a lot more experience than you might have thought it would have 2 years ago down in Georgia.
Yeah.
So we've got some really highly trained folks, and we want to get those folks back here in 2010 too. They know the state, they've got the knowledge, they know how the communities work. And you know, our staff was a real crucial component of why we made the gains we did.
Yes, one thing I didn't get a chance to mention was I know that, for instance, for a lot of points of the state, there was no literature for Barack Obama, and the state party actually printed a really nice-looking piece. You know, I guess that was a coordinated piece, and that was one of the few things we actually ever got to hand out, and that was some of the party stepped up and did to fill in the gaps. Kathy,
yeah.
I have a question real quick.
Yeah, Martin, you know, I don't know if you listened last week when we were talking with Rashad, but I'd just like to say that I really appreciated the communication that we got from the party, and I know I've talked to a lot of my friends about this, and we really felt like the party was much more open this cycle, and we really enjoyed hearing what was going on, giving us opportunities to volunteer. And as I said to Rashad last week, I certainly hope that you'll be able to continue that that sort of tradition and letting us know what's going on in the party and what we can do to help and what, you know, what kind of events are coming up. Because I really think that helps us all feel like we're engaged. And, of course, I believe that 2009 is a very important year for continuing to build the party and keeping people engaged. So I just want to say I hope that we can keep some of that happening.
Well, you know, let me get into that for a second, because one really, really good thing that we had this cycle, and, you know, we've been shifting our focus over the last 2 years more and more to the grassroots, and not just the grassroots of organizing, but the grassroots of fundraising, too. And that was actually, y'all had a conversation about fundraising a little bit earlier, and there's one thing that I did want to mention, too, which is over the last year, we've increased the number of donors, the number of people giving money to our party directly, fivefold. And the bulk of that is folks who are giving, you know, 25, 30, 40 bucks at a time. So expanding our grassroots fundraising is really important, but I want to get to what you said, which is, you know, we've got a great resource right here in Georgia that can really help this party shift up to the next gear, and that's all these volunteers, and not just the veterans who've seen a couple of cycles, but new folks who just got the political bug this year and they're getting involved in the process. And our challenge is going to be making sure to get them involved, not just wait until 2010. We got to get them involved in,
right,
you know, next year. We got to get them involved starting in January with this session. So that's
absolutely
one of the challenges that we face.
Yeah, that's very important.
And believe me, I'm going to be calling on you guys a lot too. To help us get the message out about this.
And we want you to come on and spread the message, definitely. Well, Martin, thanks for coming on in and joining us, and don't be a stranger, and kind of help get some of those legislators I know you'll be working with to call on in to give us updates.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think you're going to see some good stuff coming out of us this session. We're really, really proud of our caucus. We've got four more Democrats to help us out now, and Andre had mentioned they're looking for 2/3 in 2010. They're not going to get it.
I kind of thought it was a tall order, but because I know the Republicans are, I saw some posts on the other side complaining about their leadership. So
I think
it's just the time to vent.
You know, before I take off, let me just make a quick point about that 2/3 too, because that is crucial. y'all remember the Glenn tax last year. I think I came on and talked to you guys four or five times about this. The Democrats were able to kill that because it was a two-thirds. We killed it right there on the floor. And if that thing had passed, just imagine where we would be right now if that had passed. Imagine where we'd be if all of the state's finances were teetering on sales tax revenue alone. That's why the two-thirds is crucial.
Yes. Yes, and maybe Glenn Richardson and even his own party is getting less powerful. Well, Martin, thanks again.
Hey, thank you, guys. Take care.
Happy holidays.
Thanks, Martin.
Bye-bye.
Yes, well, and Tim, I've left you just enough time to do your outrage of the week.
Okay, David, you guys know if you listen to this that I normally don't broach the same subject 2 weeks in a row, but I just have got to return to this auto bailout again because on this subject, the Republicans in the U.S. Senate this week, along with Vice President Dick Cheney, definitely committed the outrage of the week. Now, everybody thought that the bailout was a done deal earlier. The thing sailed right through the House. But in the meantime, the vice president headed to Capitol Hill to sway some undecided senators, he said. And then on Wednesday, his public statement was this, and I quote, "If we don't do this, we will be known as the party of Herbert Hoover forever." Well, on the surface, that seemed like a decent enough statement. But remember, this is politics we're talking about. And this statement, I believe, was a subliminal message to the Senate GOP, because after that statement was issued, they stopped the bailout and then blamed it all on the Automobile Workers Union. So, I believe that we witnessed a two-pronged attack here. First target, of course, was the ever-present evil union and its mafia thug communist bosses. The Republicans, frankly, hate unions. And they fought them tooth and nail since the Wagner Act passed over 70 years ago. Unions are the one and only outlet for working people to have an equal voice in the workplace in America. And there are those in Washington who would get rid of every union today if they could, even in a time when less than 8% of the workforce in this country is in a union. They can't even stand that. And the second point I wanted to make about this was Cheney was sending a message to senators when he said this, that they could vote as they please, and that the Bush administration would then proceed with a bailout and come out looking like the hero. When Cheney said that we would be the party of Hoover, he really meant that Bush might be remembered as another Hoover. So I think that every bit of this might have been hatched by the administration and their flunkies up on the Hill. Now, I know that that might be a little far-fetched to some that are listening tonight, but frankly, I don't put anything past Bush, Cheney, and Mitch McConnell. In the meantime, while they play around up there, General Motors and Chrysler move ever closer to bankruptcy and liquidation. And if that happens, it hits here as well as everywhere else. There are nearly 55,000 jobs in Georgia that depend on the continued good health of the automobile industry. People in little towns all over the state sell automobile parts and work at car lots. Without the big three, most of these jobs are gone. Over 2 million of these support jobs alone in the U.S. are at stake. And in this economy, the loss of that many jobs all at once would just be beyond devastating. I don't understand why these Republicans do this stuff. They had no problem giving $700 billion to big shots on Wall Street, mostly without any strings. But when the average citizen needs a shot in the arm for about 5% of that, well, it just isn't there. I've often thought it remarkable in a way that the top wage earners in this country, when they get their way, as they almost always do, then the Republicans think that's fine and good. But oh, just let everyone else want something, and suddenly they think that's bad for America. These guys have gotten hammered 2 elections in a row, and they still don't get it. Please get here, January, David.
Yes, I heard something today listening to the podcast of Keith Olbermann's show. Keith Olbermann actually wasn't on this, but was on as a guest. He said, when Ronald Reagan took office, America was the largest exporter of goods, the largest importer of raw materials, and we were the largest lender of money to other nations. Now, through Reagan and both Bushes, particularly Reagan and the current Bush, I won't lay a lot of it on the father, we are the largest importer of goods, the largest exporter of raw materials, and the largest debtor in the world. Basically said, unfortunately, that's some of that's the definition of a third world country. I mean, that is really sad, and that's a tall order to undo in such a short time. And not having the auto industry, I mean, I believe it's called the backbone of American manufacturing. And
yep.
As we know, the human body, without the backbone, it doesn't function.
Right.
I just can't believe these Republicans are putting partisan interest so far ahead of the good of the nation. It's just appalling. And this Bob Corker, my goodness. I hated to see Harold Ford Jr. lose because I thought he was a good guy and I liked to have a Democrat. But I had no idea that this guy was just going to be so terrible. I mean, honestly, I mean, if you said, okay, you can get rid of one senator, Chambliss or Corker, at this point, I might have said Corker. I don't know if there's
anybody.
No,
I would.
Oh, that DeMint guy. The DeMint guy's horrible, too.
Who's who?
DeMint?
Yeah, but I
think. That's another one.
Corker is bad news. I tell you what, I'm beginning to think that, I mean, Corker's more dangerous than about anybody going right now because his. And I don't understand his disdain for American auto industry. Like we said, Saturn is going to be one of the things that's the chopping block first in his home state. But I guess he hates. You know, union workers so bad, although, you know, part of this is taking union workers taking cuts. I wonder if we could make some kind of deal. We'll take a pay cut just like you want, but then we have to have closed ballot votes or whatever kind of votes that they do for, you know, become a union shop in all of these factories in America. I wonder if the Republicans would be willing to do that. We ought to kind of let them put their money where their mouth is, because then all those other countries, all those other companies be unionized. And I'm sure a lot of these factories or these car companies from Japan and Europe, basically when they found out what union workers want, you know, like this many days off, this kind of health care, this pension plan, they'd say, oh, well, no wonder, because we get this from our very own government. We don't have to worry about it as a company.
Well, David, look, I want to ask the Republicans one little question. Where do they expect working people to work? That's my question.
Yeah,
McDonald's,
a lot of it,
Walmart.
Well, I mean, and you hate to say it, but unfortunately, I mean, you have to go back and read a lot of this, you know, Civil War era antebellum type literature. I read one in Georgia history back in college, and you know, you had three groups of folks. You had the very small minority of people, which were the rich white plantation owners. You had the slaves, and then you had the poor white folks that didn't get anything either. And the Republican Party now in the South is made up of the first group, for the most part. I mean, the ones that actually hold office. Now, they use the third group to keep power, but
yeah.
that's the mindset. I mean, it's, you know, let's use the other two groups, and who cares how they come out? Let's let them live in the trailer parks and the public housing or whatever little place they have, and we'll get what we want. I mean, it's unfortunately that's kind of the mindset of the Republican Party in the South, and since the Republican Party nationally is pretty much based in the South, that's what you're getting these days.
Well,
so,
I'll tell you what, if they let the auto industry fold, but they better go ahead and kiss the states of Ohio and Indiana and Michigan goodbye forever, and then let's see them win a presidential election.
Oh, Missouri has a, you know, Kansas City,
yeah.
The car industry. I think people are kind of coming around. I mean, people may not like the, you know, the fact that you have to bail things out, but I think people get the idea of you got to make things as a country. But once again, great show, and we'll be back next week. I know, Catherine, you'll be having a holiday party, but the kudzu vine will still be here for everybody to listen to and enjoy.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bye.
Bye.